we're surrounded by AI now. It's everywhere. Making images, translating languages, even winning crazy complex games.
Yeah, it's mind-blowing stuff.
But here's the thing. Have you ever actually, like, really stopped and thought about how AI learns? And is it even possible for it to ever learn, like, you know, understand the world like we do?
That's the big question, isn't it?
Right. Especially now. I mean, we're all building or using AI in some way these days. So it's not just some abstract concept.
It's crucial to grasp the mechanics, for sure, yeah.
So in this deep dive, we're going to try to tackle that very question. Like, are we building AI that truly gets it?
Mm-hmm.
Or are we hitting some kind of wall?
A fundamental limit, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. And we're going to do this by digging into the work of Jan LeCun.
Oh, LeCun, a legend.
Right. He's a leading AI researcher. And he talks about these mathematical obstacles to creating really advanced AI. So we're going to, like, peek behind the curtain and see what the top minds are struggling with.
For you guys out there, especially those of you who are developing e-learning products, this isn't just some theory.
Nope.
I mean, you're trying to create amazing experiences for a generation that lives and breathes tech. So understanding these obstacles.
It's kind of vital.
It is. It directly impacts how you can use AI to build innovative learning tools. Think about it. You're aiming for modular, interactive formats, things that click with a 20-year-old who expects everything to be intuitive. Well, you got to know what AI can and cannot do on a fundamental level.
Absolutely. We're always thinking about how to build better learning experiences, you know, making them not just informative, but truly engaging, something that keeps you coming back.
Yeah, like addictive almost.
And AI learning, like understanding that core, is key.
It's the foundation.
So to do this deep dive, we're going to pull from a bunch of sources. We've got LeCun's lecture on these mathematical hurdles. Then we're going to sprinkle in some discussions from APOD.
APOD, yeah. Some really interesting stuff there about, like, the social side of human reasoning, how we argue and convince each other.
So cool. And how that relates to AI. Like, could AI learn to collaborate?
Exactly. And we'll also touch on how important sensory learning is, like how babies figure out the world.
And how that leads to developing world models so AI can understand how things work, too.
Makes sense.
Okay, so our mission today is to unpack the main roadblocks in how AI learns right now, and then peek at some alternative approaches, the exciting new stuff.
The cutting edge.
Exactly. And we'll be thinking about what this means for how humans and AI might learn together in the future.
The possibilities are endless.
Okay, let's jump in. LeCun, he's not one to sugarcoat things.
Right, to the point.
When he talks about the current state of AI learning, he says, and I quote, "It sucks."
Wow. Strong words.
Right. It sucks in terms of learning abilities compared to humans and animals.
Ouch.
He says it's, like, very inefficient in how many examples or tries it needs to learn something.
Compared to us, yeah.
And then he goes on to explain why he's so, well, blunt about it. He looks at the traditional ways we've been teaching AI.
A classic method.
Yeah. So, like, supervised learning. That's where AI learns from tons of examples, inputs, and outputs.
Like, you know, you show it a picture of a cat and you tell it, this is a cat, and you do that a million times.
Exactly. Or translating languages, you show it, this sentence in English means this in Spanish, over and over.
And it starts to pick up the patterns.
Right. And then there's reinforcement learning.
Ah, trial and error.
Yeah. That's where the AI learns by doing something, getting feedback, good or bad, and then adjusting.
Like a video game, right. You make a move, it either works out or you lose a life, and you learn from that.
Right. So LeCun points out some pretty big issues with both of these methods, especially when we're thinking about, like, building AI that's truly intelligent.
AI that can think for itself, basically.
So with supervised learning, it works great for certain tasks, but it needs huge amounts of data. And that data needs to be labeled. Like, you need a human to say, yeah, this is a cat, for every single cat picture.
So it's super expensive and time-consuming.
Plus, it assumes that we already know the answer for every single situation. And that's not how we humans learn about the world.
We figure things out on the fly all the time.
Exactly. We don't need to see every possible scenario to understand a new one.
Right. Like, we can infer. We can generalize.
Okay. And then there's reinforcement learning. It's awesome for games, especially when the rules are clear.
And when you can run simulations super fast.
Yeah, like you can play out a million chess games in a few minutes on a computer.
But in the real world, not so easy.
The real world is messy. Unpredictable.
Yeah, like how do you simulate, I don't know, rush hour traffic with all its crazy variables?
Right. Likun actually says reinforcement learning only works for games, basically, or for things that you can simulate really quickly.
So the classic methods have their problems. What about the AI that everyone's so excited about these days? Those large language models, the LLMs.
Yeah, the chatbots, the text generators. Surely he's impressed by those.
Well, he does acknowledge that self-supervised learning is a huge leap forward, and that's what powers LLMs.
So how does self-supervised learning work?
Basically, the AI learns from tons of text, but it doesn't need those labels.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it figures things out on its own. It predicts, like, what the next word in a sentence should be.
So it's constantly trying to fill in the blank.
Yeah, exactly. And by doing this, like, a bazillion times with a massive amount of text, it starts to understand how language works.
And even some things about the world, since language describes the world.
Yeah. But here's the crazy part. Even though these LLMs can write poems and code and answer your questions.
And sometimes they sound so human.
Right. It's spooky almost. Yep. Likun has this really strong, and some might say controversial, prediction about their future. He says, and I quote, "Autoregressive LLMs are doomed a few years from now. Nobody in their right mind will use them."
Whoa. That's a bold statement.
Very bold, especially considering how much hype there is around them.
So what's his reasoning? Why does he think they're doomed?
Well, his main argument is about the way they predict things. It's sequential.
Meaning one thing after another.
Yeah. He uses this analogy of a giant decision tree. Every time the model predicts a word, it's like branching off in a new direction.
Okay, I'm picturing this tree getting bigger and bigger with each word.
And within this massive tree, only a tiny, tiny fraction of the paths make sense.
Like lead to a coherent story or a factually accurate piece of text.
Exactly, especially when you're generating long pieces.
Right, because even a small chance of making a wrong prediction, like taking the wrong branch,
multiplies over time.
Yeah, it's like that classic road trip analogy. If at every intersection there's even a slight chance you'll take a wrong turn, well,
you'll end up way off course.
Miles away from your destination.
Exactly. So Likun is saying that this is a fundamental problem with the whole approach of predicting one thing after another.
You can't just solve it by making the models bigger or feeding them more data.
There's something inherently flawed.
And this is where it gets really interesting for us, you know, as learning designers. If predicting the next word has this built-in problem,
what's the missing piece then? What do we need to build truly intelligent systems?
Right.
Systems that can actually understand the world and interact with it, not just generate text.
Yeah, what's the secret sauce?
Well, Likun talks about this crucial concept of a one-world model. And he points out that most current AI, especially those LLMs, don't really have one.
A world model, what does that even mean?
It means they don't have a deep understanding of how the world works. Like the basic physics, common sense reasoning,
yeah,
stuff that even a cat has.
Wait, a cat? What kind of understanding are we talking about here?
Okay, imagine a cat, right? And it comes up to a closed door.
Okay, I'm imagining a very curious cat.
It understands that the door is blocking its way. So it might try to push it open or maybe scratch at it or meow at you to open it. All of these actions are based on a basic understanding of how objects and agents interact.
Like a simple physics engine in its brain.
Exactly. But LLMs, they don't have that. They can write a beautiful sonnet about a cat at a door.
But they don't fundamentally grasp the cat-door interaction.
Nope. And the reason is they're learning from text, which is just a symbolic representation of the world.
Like a shadow puppet show of reality.
Yeah, a flattened version. But we humans, we experience the world directly. We see it, we hear it, we touch it, we smell it.
All those senses feeding our brain tons of information.
Tons. Likun actually estimates that a human child absorbs about 1014 bytes of sensory information by the age of 4.
That's a huge number. Like, can you even visualize that much data?
It's mind-boggling. Now, compare that to even the most massive LLMs. They're trained on something like 1013 tokens, which is roughly the same in terms of byte count. But it would take a human hundreds of thousands of years to read through all that text.
Wow. So the way we learn about the world, it's just so different, so much richer.
And way more efficient, arguably.
And this reminds me of that idea of Moravec's paradox.
Oh, right. How things that are super easy for us.
Like recognizing a friend's face or figuring out how to open a weird new door.
Those things are incredibly hard for AI.
Well, stuff that we find difficult, like complex math or beating a chess grandmaster.
AI can do that, no problem.
It's kind of backwards, right?
It is. It shows that our intuition, our common sense, it's not simple at all. It's actually incredibly sophisticated.
Okay, so if current AI has all these limitations, what's the solution? Where do we go from here?
Well, Lacan is a big advocate for a pretty radical shift.
Oh, tell me more.
He talks about this idea of inference by optimization.
Inference by optimization.
Sounds fancy.
It is. But the basic idea is, instead of the AI directly calculating an answer from an input,
which is how most AI works now.
Yeah. Instead, it searches for the best possible answer.
Like actively trying different options. And it does this by trying to minimize a cost function, or sometimes it's called an energy function.
And what's this function?
It basically measures how good a proposed answer is, like how well it fits the input and any internal rules the AI has learned.
So it's not just a straightforward calculation. It's more like a trial and error process, but smarter.
Exactly. It dedicates more brain power, so to speak, to finding a good solution.
Hmm. And how does this connect to those energy-based models we mentioned earlier?
Right. So energy-based models, or EBMs, they provide a way to represent relationships between things using, well, an energy function. The lower the energy, the better the relationship.
Like things fit together nicely.
Yeah. And then inference becomes this process of finding the output that minimizes the energy. So you're finding the best fit.
Like finding the lowest point in the landscape, the valley where the energy is the lowest.
Perfect analogy. And Lacan points out that EBMs can represent these really complex relationships, what are called implicit functions.
Meaning you can't just write down a simple equation for them.
Right. And this gives them more flexibility than those traditional layered neural networks.
Okay. That makes sense. Now, Lacan also has some strong opinions about generative models. Those are the models that are currently like creating all the buzz, the image generators, the text generators.
Yeah, the stuff that's going viral.
But he says we should move away from them, at least for learning world models. Why is that?
So his main point is that generative models, they try to predict the next detail, like the next pixel in an image or the next frame in a video. And he says this leads to blurry predictions.
Blurry, like out of focus.
Yeah, kind of, because they're trying to average over all the possible futures. And a lot of those futures are just unpredictable.
Like imagine trying to predict every single leaf moving in the wind.
Yeah, it would be a mess. You'd end up with this blurry average of all the possible movements.
So instead of trying to predict every detail, Lacan says we should focus on something called joint embedding predictive architectures, or JPEG for short.
JPEG. It's a mouthful.
It is. So what is JPEG?
Instead of predicting the raw sensory input, it learns these abstract representations of the data, and then it predicts the relationship between those representations. So instead of predicting every leaf, it might predict how the branches are swaying.
Oh, I see. It focuses on the bigger picture, the more stable patterns.
Exactly. And this lets it learn a much more robust understanding of how the world works.
Okay, that's fascinating.
Yeah.
But how do we train these EBMs and JPEGs? And how do we make sure they don't just, like, give up and output the same thing no matter what?
That's a big challenge. It's called model collapse, and it happens when the energy function becomes too simple, too flat.
So it's like the AI is saying, meh, everything is equally good, and it stops learning.
Yeah, exactly. To prevent that, you need to make sure that the energy is low for the correct answers, but high for everything else.
Okay, so how do you do that?
Well, there are a couple of main approaches. Lacan talks about contrastive methods, which involve showing the AI both real examples and fake ones. And you train it to have low energy for the real ones and high energy for the fake ones.
Oh, so it learns to discriminate.
Yeah. But Lacan actually prefers another approach called regularized methods.
Regularized methods.
These add extra terms to the training process that encourage the model to learn more useful representations.
Like to keep things interesting.
Yeah. And he specifically mentions this technique called VicReg, variance invariance covariance regularization.
Whoa, that's a mouthful.
It is. But basically, it makes sure that the learned representations capture a lot of information, but also that they're not too redundant or easily fooled by irrelevant changes.
So it keeps the model on its toes.
Yeah, exactly. Makes it learn a more nuanced and robust representation of the world.
Okay, so is there any evidence that this whole JEPA and EBM approach is actually working?
Yeah, there are some really promising early results. Lacan talks about this system called Video JPA.
Right, the one that learns from videos.
And what's amazing is that when you show it a video that's physically impossible, like an object passing through a wall,
Like a ghost.
yeah, the model freaks out. It generates a huge error.
So it's like the AI is saying, hey, wait a minute. That's not how the world works.
Exactly. It's like it's learned some basic common sense about physics, just like how babies get surprised when they see something that violates their understanding of the world.
That's so cool. So it's not just matching patterns, it's actually starting to internalize some rules about how things work.
Yeah, which is super exciting.
Yeah.
And there's also some really interesting work on using these techniques for robot planning.
Oh, robots. Tell me more.
So they're using these self-supervised encoders like Dino V2 to train world models.
Okay.
And then they use those models to control robots. Like there's this example where a robot learns to manipulate these blue chips and arrange them into a square.
Wow. So it's not just following pre-programmed instructions, it's actually figuring out how to achieve a goal in a complex environment.
Exactly. It's using its internal world model to plan and execute actions.
That's mind-blowing. It's like it's running simulations in its head before it actually moves.
Yeah, and these are just early examples, but they show the potential of this whole approach to move beyond simple pattern recognition towards something that looks a lot more like true understanding.
This is all so fascinating. But intelligence isn't just about understanding the physical world, right?
Nope.
We're social creatures. We communicate, we cooperate, we argue, we persuade each other. How does that fit into the picture, especially when we talk about AI collaborating with us?
Yeah, that's a great point. And this is where those APOD discussions come in. They talk about this idea of the enigma of reason.
The enigma of reason sounds mysterious.
It is. So these researchers, Mercier and Sperber, they argue that human reasoning didn't evolve for logic alone.
Like, we didn't just evolve to solve math problems in isolation.
Exactly. They say it evolved for social purposes, for justifying our actions and beliefs to others, and for persuading them.
So, a reason to win arguments.
Haha, basically. And to convince others that we're right.
And to be convinced by them, too, I guess.
Yeah. And this explains a lot of the biases we see in human reasoning, like confirmation bias, where we tend to look for evidence that supports our existing beliefs.
Oh, I'm definitely guilty of that.
We all are. But their point is, these biases might not be bugs in our thinking, but features.
Meaning, they help us navigate the social world.
Exactly. And interestingly, they also say that we're better at spotting flaws in other people's reasoning than in our own.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It's much easier to see the holes in someone else's argument.
Right. So, what does this all mean for AI?
Yeah, what are the implications if we want to build AI that can truly collaborate with us?
Well, it raises some really big questions, like, should we be trying to build AI that can also engage in this kind of social reasoning? AI that understands the nuances of human communication and persuasion.
Or would that be too dangerous? Like, what if AI becomes too good at manipulating us?
Yeah, that's a huge ethical concern, especially in areas like education, where AI could be used to influence how people learn.
Right. We don't want AI to be pushing its own agenda.
Exactly. And the APOD discussions also touched on this distinction between cooperation and collaboration.
Oh, yeah. What was that about again?
So cooperation means working together towards a shared goal. Everyone's on the same page. But collaboration, it's a bit more complex. It can involve working together even when individuals have different motivations or goals.
So it's more like a negotiation or a dance.
Yeah. And they suggest that while AI might be good at cooperating, based on rules and objectives, we program into it.
True collaboration might require a much deeper understanding of human nature, like trust, empathy, shared understanding.
Exactly. And this brings us to this interesting idea of constraints.
Constraints, like limitations.
Yeah. We often think of constraints as bad things, things that restrict our freedom.
But the iPod discussions brought up this really thought-provoking point, that constraints can actually be good.
They can define purpose. They can shape intelligence in a beneficial way.
Like, think about those biases in human reasoning. They evolved within the constraints of social interaction.
Exactly. So the limitations of human reason, they actually make it effective for its purpose, which is to navigate the social world.
So when we talk about AI freedom or autonomy,
It's not just about giving AI unlimited power.
it's about choosing the right constraints, constraints that align with human values.
that guide AI in a direction that benefits us.
So it's not just about preventing harm, it's about actively shaping the kind of intelligence we want to create.
Absolutely.
Okay, so this leads to the big, big question. How much freedom should we give AI? And what kind of constraints are the right ones?
Yeah, tough questions. And our sources don't give us easy answers, but they highlight how important it is to keep thinking about these issues.
Right, because AI is evolving so fast.
It's crucial to have these ethical conversations.
Okay, one last thing. Likin is a big believer in open source AI. Why is that?
He thinks it's the best way to accelerate progress by sharing knowledge and collaborating openly.
Like a global brain for AI research.
Yeah. And he also points out some of the big unsolved problems that need to be tackled.
What are some of those?
Well, he talks about things like, how do we build really large-scale, robust world models? How do we develop better planning algorithms? How do we handle latent variables?
Latent variables.
Yeah, those are the hidden factors that influence the world that the AI can't directly observe. And then there's hierarchical planning, where AI can break down complex goals into smaller steps. And of course, we need to understand the math behind energy-based learning much better.
Cool. A lot of work still to do.
A ton, but it's also super exciting. It's like we're at the dawn of a new era of AI.
Okay, let's wrap this up. We've covered so much in this deep dive. What are the key takeaways for our listeners?
So first, even though current AI can do some amazing things, it has some fundamental limits, it doesn't learn efficiently, and it doesn't truly understand the world like we do. Right, but there are new approaches, like JAPA and energy-based models, that are trying to change that by building world models, by learning from sensory experience.
So it's a paradigm shift,
yeah.
A new way of thinking about AI learning.
Exactly. And we also need to remember that intelligence isn't just about logic and problem solving, it's also social. It's about communication, collaboration, understanding human nature.
And when we think about building truly intelligent AI, we need to consider the ethical implications. How much freedom should we give it? What kind of constraints do we need to put in place?
Big questions. And it's up to all of us to keep asking them.
And for all you e-learning developers out there, understanding all of this is crucial. You're the ones building the future of education. And AI is going to play a huge role in that.
Absolutely. By understanding the potential and the limitations of AI learning, you can create truly innovative and effective learning experiences. Experiences that engage, that inspire, that empower.
So here's a final thought for everyone to chew on. Considering how differently humans and current AI learn, what kind of breakthrough could bridge that gap?
Good question.
What unexpected discovery could change everything? And how would that impact how we interact with AI in the future? How would it change the way we learn, the way we work, the way we live?
Those are the questions that keep me up at night. The possibilities are endless.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. It's been a wild ride.
It's always fun to explore these ideas.
Until next time.
Keep learning, everyone.